There's a little tidbit of Titanic mythology that floats around, pops up in books from time to time. This claim that a woman from third class, tempted by the chance to spy the finery in first class on the ship, made her way up to the dining saloon, to the windows framing the illustrious smoking lounge, to see the gowns, hear the music. Most people discount this possibility, say that the Jack Dawson-esque storyline like that from James Cameron's Titanic is an excellent example of what couldn't happen, given quarantine laws and strict security between classes. And the security was indeed strict. Most writers don't bother to name the woman who claimed this, and you won't find her name in many Titanic book indexes. But we know who she was, this woman who wanted to observe the music and the cigar smoke and the finery unseen. The woman who claimed she did exactly that. Her name was Hilda Hellström. She was from Sweden. She was in her early 20s, single, headed to a new life bravely in the United States after the death of her long-suffering mother. She recounted the incident to her own daughter years later, that she, quote, found her way up to the main ballroom. Titanic didn't have a ballroom. It didn't. But it's possible, or at least it seems to me, that to a working-class woman on a grand ocean liner for the very first time, that the presence of a band entails, in rooms as ornate as Titanic's were in first class, that all this could seem like something she described as a ballroom. Semantics matter less than legend here, because Hilda survived to tell this tale, whether it's true or not. And she went on to live a life of wit and struggle and successes and undoubtedly failures, just as we all do. Her family speaks of her sarcasm and her charm to this day. Until recently, Hilda's memory seemed vague in our picture of Titanic shadowy, her grave in Skokie, Illinois, next to her husband, void of even a headstone, his too. Just a few weeks ago, though, a veritable team of Titanic researchers, enthusiasts, and descendants brought her story back out into the light. A life. Legends and minutiae, a little bit of everything. Again, just like we all are. So today I bring you an oral history of Hilda, so to speak, and cast her into light. A woman who survived Titanic, but also so, so much more. I'm LA Beatles, and this is Unsinkable, the Titanic podcast. This is Out into the Light, third class passenger, Hilda Hellström. First and foremost, before I get you to this extraordinary episode, I want to thank my newest Patreon members. You guys are the lifeblood of this independent podcast, and it is always a top priority to make sure that I acknowledge my newly joined members. So thank you, Nicholas. Thank you, Valerie Hoback. Thank you, Patricia Carpenter. And thank you, Arlo. Thank you for joining us over on Patreon. There are 2+ years of backlogged bonus episodes now. There is a really active community going there. There are a lot of members now. And we had a great Zoom meetup just this past weekend for the holidays, a great turnout. We'll be doing more of that in the future. The format works really well, so probably for a book club. I posted a really fun movie kind of side project podcast there just the other day. So it's a place where I do post a lot of extra stuff, and I really enjoy talking to you all on there. So if it's something that you've considered, and maybe give it a try for a month and see. There's a lot of content there. So again, thank you. I'm so grateful for every single patron. And I'm also grateful for every single listener. If you are someone who listens to this podcast and contributes, interacts in any way with it, whether it be on Instagram or reviewing or shooting me an email. I'm thankful for every single one of those interactions. I'm really thankful to Mia, a listener who answered a call I put out on Instagram about anyone living in the Skokie, Illinois area where this memorial service was to take place last month. And she very graciously and generously gave her time to go to this event, to record it, to run interviews with descendants, to help the Titanic Museum attraction in Pigeon Forge have someone on the ground there. And then all of us collaborated with the great, brilliant material that she brought back to create, essentially, like I said, a sort of new oral history of Hilda Hellstrom. So that's Mia. She's a listener who has expertly become a part of the podcast, and you'll hear her in the interviews asking questions, and you'll also hear me interview her towards the end of this episode about the experience. I feel like I'm introducing a cast of characters, and I kind of am. So that's Mia. Also, you should know Paul. Paul Burns is the curator of the Titanic Museum attractions. And he was very active in this process, in this event as well. And so you're going to hear his voice in a few moments. You're also going to hear from a man named Tony Probst, a Titanic collector who spearheaded the headstones being placed for Hilda and her husband and this memorial service. So you're going to hear a little bit of his perspective as well. I feel like I am truly introducing a cast of characters here. So you'll hear from Mia, you're going to hear from Paul, you're going to hear from Tony, and very importantly, you're going to hear from Anton and Claire, who are descendants of Hilda Hellstrom. So after I give you a little bit of background about Hilda, I am going to launch you into this oral history of Hilda's life based around this wonderful and very important event that happened in November in Skokie, the unveiling of these headstones. It takes a village to do these types of important things. So a huge thank you to Paul, to Tony, to Mia, to Anton, to Claire, and to everyone at the Titanic Museum attractions for helping to make this happen. I'm honored to be involved. I'm honored to present this to you in this format and allow you to learn about Hilda. And let's bring her into the light, which is a phrase I totally stole from Mia, as you'll find in the interviews. And I did ask her, and she said I could use it. But yes, her story is coming out into the light for the first time in so many years. So thank you to everybody. And here we go with a little bit of background on Hilda's life so that you can head into these interviews with some knowledge as a pivot. Miss Hilda Maria Hellstrom was 22 when she boarded Titanic. She was born on December 7th, 1889. She had two brothers and two sisters. She lived in Sweden until 1912, when she left. Her mother had been very ill. She had been planning this voyage to the United States for quite a while, but she had been waiting because she was a caregiver for her mother. Unfortunately, her mother passed away. Her father was still alive and not doing well, but one of her sisters volunteered to take over his care so that Hilda could finally go to the United States. Immigration to the U.S. was, as we've talked about on the podcast, the very common, but also the bread and butter of these Atlantic liners that crossed back and forth. Hilda had been planning her trip for a long time, probably saving, probably imagining over and over again what she would pack and what she had on her person. She was meant to be on the Adriatic, but, and we hear this story a lot with passengers heading into the fateful journey in 1912, she was transferred on account of the coal strike that was going on in the spring of 1912. And so this little seemingly benign switch from Adriatic to Titanic, as it turns out to be for a lot of people, is not benign at all. She boarded Titanic at Southampton, as a third-class passenger. She was in cabin 135, far aft on D-deck with other single women. And this was the way of it. If you were a single woman traveling on your own, then you bunked with other single women, often that you didn't know unless you were traveling in a group of other single women, and you would be in this part of the ship. She was headed to the home of her aunt, a widow named Johanna Erickson, and she lived in Evanston, Illinois. So on the ship, there are quotes that we have related from her daughter. Her daughter was Ellen Larson Sentco, and you'll recognize those names because Hilda's husband, you will hear his name is last name is Larson, and of course the descendant last name is Sentco, which I also mentioned. And so these puzzle pieces will start falling into place in your head. So we have her memories of Titanic relayed from her daughter. She told her daughter that she was cramped for space in the lower berth of her cabin, that she was always curious about what the rest of the ship was like. It seems like she felt a little bit restless in third class, and that she was drawn to the sound of the music coming from above. So she says she made her way through the second class all the way up to first class, passing by men smoking and playing cards, and found her way, like the quote says, up to the quote-unquote main ballroom, and found herself in the presence of music and, quote, remained there unseen by anyone. And she told her family this story, her daughter and others. And I think you have to sort of decide within yourself whether you think that happened. But after learning a little bit about Hilda and the memories from her family and descendants, I think there's a distinct possibility that she had the right amount of gumption to potentially make that happen. And you've got to remember, even in the tightest of security, even in the tightest of circumstances, if you're smart, and it sounds like she was very smart, you can sort of sometimes get away with anything. You just have to sort of be invisible. So I definitely think it's possible. So the night of the collision, she had not gone to bed yet. She went on deck, couldn't really figure out what was going on. So she went back to her room. But when she was back in the cabin, she felt this intense sense of unease, decided to go on deck, decided it would be better to be aware of what was going on and visualize it, see it for herself. So someone grabbed her and helped her to a lifeboat. She made it into one of the last boats with a fellow Swedish woman, and they had a bottle of brandy between them and calmed their nerves. And to this I say, yes, that's exactly what I would need in that situation. So thank goodness for that bottle of brandy. But they had each other. The Swedish woman was named Velen Oman. In a letter home, she recalled being on the Carpathia, the rescue ship, of course, for Titanic. She said that she was, quote, broke, pale, and skinny, that they were, quote, stowed in like pigs on Carpathia. And Carpathia was very crowded and full of much suffering. I think it's refreshing to hear someone write honestly about it. In New York, she was helped by the Women's Relief Committee, but she headed to Illinois, where her original destination still waited for her just now after this unimaginable trauma. She was a single woman, so she did not lose any family in the sinking. She would go on to marry John Edward Larson in 1915. They had a daughter named Ellen, and she lived this very, as you'll hear, this very full, rich, nuanced life. And I won't say anything else because I want you to hear about her life after Titanic. It's such a crucial part of who she was. Titanic was just a few days of her life. And while I'm sure it had a permanent effect on who she was so much more, just as all Titanic survivors were before and after the ship sank. I'm going to take you on a little journey now. This is truly a collaborative thing. I can't take all the credit for this episode existing. All of these wonderful people took time to talk about Hilda. And so the podcast is the vessel by which you get to hear these incredible stories. So you're going to hear from Paul at the ceremony. Then you're going to hear from Hilda's descendants, Anton and Claire. Then you're going to hear from Tony, who put the headstone ceremony together. And then you're going to hear Mia and I talking about all of it and digesting everything and processing everything. And I think all these words speak for themselves. So I'm going to get you right to this series of interviews that creates this new oral history of Hilda Hellstrom. So thank you again to everyone involved. And please reach out. Let me know if you have any input or any other information about Hilda that we didn't include. And enjoy hearing the story of this incredible and strong woman.
We're gathered here today at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Skokie, Illinois, here to pay tribute to a Titanic survivor, third-class passenger, Hilda Maria Hellstrom. We were honored when asked to take part in this endeavor. We were also honored by meeting her grandson, Anton Senko, and her great-granddaughter, Claire Senko. We hope that this can bring some added and further closure to the family, to Hilda, and her husband, John Larson.
Here's Anton and Claire, descendants of Hilda Hellstrom.
If you guys just want to introduce yourself real quick, what are your names? Why are we here? Who are you to each other?
You go first.
My name's Anton Senko, grandson of Hilda Marie Hellstrom. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm here.
And I'm Claire Senko, his niece and great-granddaughter of Hilda Hellstrom.
And it sounds like neither of you ever were actually able to meet Hilda. No,
She passed away 2 years. I was born in 64. She passed away in 62.
You just
at
missed
my
her.
Mother's house. Spent the last year of her life at my mother's house, where I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
But obviously never met her.
Mm-hmm. So based on, you know, what you had heard, family stories, obviously you had family, your mother obviously knew her.
Oh, yeah.
What was she like as a person?
Everything that I know of Hilda was related to me by my mother, and I would say I never really started paying attention to this stuff until maybe mm-hmm. 10, 12 years old, and even then it was just kind of a passing mention of it until, I would have been about 30 or so. When a Titanic historian by the name of Philip Gowan contacted her, and they had correspondence together, my mother relayed information that Hilda, her mother, had relayed to her, to Philip, and that's when that correspondence started. That's when the rest of the family, we already knew this, mm-hmm. but, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't a big thing in our family. It was there, everybody knew it, but it wasn't like, you know, mm-hmm. something that was brought up often.
Yeah.
Just in passing.
What was some of that information that she relayed, if you remember any of it?
Her mom used to go fishing mm-hmm. just about every day on the pier. They live close to the lake, and fish for perch, and that was her breakfast, and they were hard work, you know, mm-hmm. just to survive. And,
yeah. She was a fisherwoman.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All her life?
I think it's a Swedish thing.
I don't know.
I remember my mother mentioning she fished in Sweden as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. That was one of my questions. You know, Hilda She never went back to Sweden.
No. She was definitely afraid of the ocean by that time.
I don't blame her.
Yeah. How do you think that loss of her culture affected her?
I'm just kind of speculating here, but I wouldn't say she actually lost any culture. Mm-hmm. She probably assimilated somewhat, too, with the American culture, but she was there with other Swedes as well. Apparently, this area, the North Shore here, mm-hmm. Was kind of somewhat of a hot spot for them to immigrate here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. And she was able to rebuild a home here, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. And now, Claire, how old, around when do you remember learning or becoming aware that Hilda had been on Titanic?
So I was actually fairly young. I would say like 9, 10-ish. Pretty much my family always like made me pretty aware of mm-hmm. that piece of history that I was a part of. Yeah. So,
and then young. Yeah, for both of you, when you learned about it in school, was that something you're like, oh, I know about that?
Well. Yeah, that's the funny thing is, like in school when that subject would come up, I was just kind of like, yeah, that's no big deal. My grandmother was on there. Yeah, your grandmother was on there? It's like, yeah. Oh, wow. But to me, it was just another family.
Just a part of.
Part of family history, you know.
Yeah. It wasn't nearly as monumental as it was for other people?
No.
Wow.
I mean, we've had a lot of other rich family history as well. You know, there was no one thing. That one thing, as far as the Titanic, never actually stood out above anything else.
Yeah. That's so great. I know a lot of times our perception of survivors is, you know, we know their life up to April of 1912, and then we don't know anything else.
Right.
And we forget to ask questions about anything else.
Yeah, she held a love to garden. I remember my mother saying quite often, and seeing pictures of the rose garden, so like just beautiful roses. Far as you could see in the yard, you know, just apparently they ran a French laundry.
Wow. So she gardened, she fished, she was, sounds like a bit of an outdoors woman.
Yeah, raised chickens, stuff like that, in our small little yard.
Wow.
And her husband John was a chauffeur, and he also used to had the keys to all the affluent peoples. There's a lot of affluent people in this area. He would had the keys to their house. He would go open their house in the morning in winter time mm-hmm. and start their fires in their fireplace so that people wouldn't have to get out of bed to a cold house. Yeah.
I think I would pay somebody to do that for me right now. Well, except I like doing that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big houses around here that it's mm-hmm. big houses to heat, so they wanted to get them warmed up early, I guess.
How did Hilda and John meet? Do you know?
As far as I know, it was in. She came here to stay with her widowed aunt, Johanna Eriksson, and John was already here, and they had a business together, running the French Laundry. And then when Hilda came to stay with Johanna, they must have hit it off somehow, yeah. And the rest is history. You know, mm-hmm. I think they were married not too long after.
Wow.
And then they moved to a house on Green Bay Road here, and rest is history.
That's fantastic. But, yeah. So I know we just said, you know, sometimes we talk about Titanic too much for survivors, but let's talk more about Titanic. For both,
That's why we're here.
Yeah. Anton, you said it wasn't super momentous of a thing for you. It just seemed kind of normal.
No, it was no different than, you know, Dad worked in a factory or mm-hmm. was in World War II or, you know, any other family member. You know, there's a lot of varied history in our family, like most families. Mm-hmm. So it was just another tidbit of, it kind of rose above.
Yeah.
When the Titanic movie come out, though, that's when everybody started.
Yeah.
Hey, wasn't your grandmother on the Titanic? Like, yeah. Oh, you know.
Claire, did it feel like a bigger deal for you in the era you grew up?
It's always been something like kind of neat, I guess, like in different from some certain people. It was just part of my life, so.
Wow, that's really interesting.
I'm definitely very, humbled and proud to be a part of that.
That's the funny thing, is later in life, now I'm 59 years old, and later in life, I come to appreciate this part of her family history more, and wish I would have paid more attention and asked more questions of my mother, because now it's like, wow. You know, but like I said, back then it really wasn't a really big deal. Mm-hmm. It was just a piece of family history, and we all had our lives and doing what we're doing. And
yeah,
but
which I think that's one of the reasons why we feel so connected to Titanic, is that it was, you know, people with lives, and then they went on and lived life. Yeah. You know, she was your grandma. She loved to garden. She had chickens.
Yeah, she's quite active up until her last days. Then she came to stay in the house where I grew up, but on her last year of her life, and my mom took care of her.
Tony and I were talking a little bit about how, you know, Titanic has this continuing oral history, and how descendants, you guys play a part in it. Before, I don't know if we knew. I don't know if that was on the record that Hilda had chickens after Titanic, or that she guarded, or that
like I said, raising chickens, and they're starting to survive. You know, I mean, back in those days, my parents as well, we vegetable garden, hunting, fishing. My parents grew up in the Depression. You did what you had to do to supplement, you know, and they always did well, you know. Times have changed, but
So now through you guys, we've been able to, you know, to flesh her out a little bit more.
Yeah. And I am grateful to Tony for that, for sparking my interest, re-sparking it in this whole saga. It is quite a thing. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have realized this much earlier in my life, but here I am.
Now that Hilda, you know, her name is out in the light again, literally with the new headstone. What does that mean for you guys? What do you want her legacy to be going forward?
She's a badass. She just gotta keep going.
She was.
She's definitely a strong woman, but I think it's great that her memory, I mean, yeah, she was a Titanic survivor, and she came here and made a life for herself in spite of that tragedy. And a person can only imagine emotionally and physically what she endured to get here and do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud to have somebody like that in my family history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what makes me such a stubborn person?
It's that Senko thing. There's some stubbornness there. It goes way back, you know. On both sides.
I'm glad to be part of the family.
Yeah.
Did she ever give, like you said, she was kind of a badass. Did she ever give any details about the sneaking into first class thing?
I remember my mother talking about it, and she just kind of snickered about it.
Mm-hmm.
No real details that were relayed to me through my mother or anything. Mm-hmm. Just that she did it. And in fact, the stuff that's on the internet where she stood there unseen by anyone, that was relayed to her, to my mom, firsthand from Hilda.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my mother's firsthand account of that relation of the story.
Yeah. Well, rule number one of being a sneaky person is you don't tell your secrets.
It's true.
It's true.
Just
saying.
Loose lips sink ships.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh.
No pun intended there, but there might be a little time.
Yeah.
I think she may have been a little bit snarky too. This is kind of what I got from my mother and other stuff, the research with Tony Prost and stuff. She may have been had a little bit of an attitude. I'm very honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, same. Yeah. How do you feel having such a, you know, a strong female figure? Just the fact that, you know, she was 23, still single, which in 1912 was not super common. And she came across the ocean by herself, like no male chaperone. How does that feel having such an ancestor?
Good question.
Where do I start? First of all, the guys must have sucked over there. And she had to hit the ship and head out.
Well, she ended up marrying one of them that came from there.
I think maybe that's kind of where I get some of my snarkiness.
Just remember, kiddo, it matter how how bad the chips may look for you or things are, you know, just think about your grandmother.
That had to have been like a really big adventure, I would think. And pretty scary, and then to go through that too.
Imagine, today no cell phones, no nothing. Oh, yeah. Just there's your room down there, and you know, back there in the back of the boat. And
now it's full of water.
Have a nice trip. Yeah.
Look.
Sounds like it's really great that we've got to get such a formidable woman's story.
I feel like she's kind of what I get from this whole experience with her and her survival and all that is the strength and ability to move on and to survive and build a family, build a life, and carry on despite all odds. Like, so, yeah, despite all that, she did it.
She did it, indeed. Now here's Tony talking about the artifacts and the headstone for Hilda.
I was on a business trip to Chicago about 2 years ago, and I went to hunt down the gravesite of Hilda Maria Hellstrom, whom I have the ticket for and her inspection card, baggage claim, and her visa to leave Sweden. So I'm on the business trip in Chicago, and I'm out hunting for the grave of Hilda Maria Hellstrom. I heard she was buried at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Skokie, and I went on a quest to try and find her headstone and where she was buried. And I actually spent probably over 2 days, about 40 minutes a day, hunting and could not find it. About a year later, I was back on the same trip to Chicago, business trip, and I went a little further, and I went into the office to try and find out where she was buried. And they told me it was in plot number 515. So with that information, I went out, and some of the plot numbers were above ground and some were hidden. They were very difficult to find. And it took me into the second day of about 40 minutes in the second day when I finally found it. And discovered there was no headstone there, and that's why I couldn't find where she was buried. So I went to the office, and I asked why there was no headstone on her site, and they did a little research and found that the family didn't have enough money at the time for a headstone. And I just casually asked what it would cost to put a headstone down, and they said, well, they couldn't do that no matter what. I would have to get permission from the family just in case, you know, there was issues with religion or whatever was said or done to the headstone. So then I went on a quest, and I finally found Anton Senko and his brother Steven, and that's how all this was put together.
And now, so you mentioned you bought the ticket, you bought the boarding pass,
yeah.
And you said that that's the only known collection of all of the documents.
Of every document for one person aboard Titanic. And my belief is why this is the only collection is, if you imagine what you do if you're traveling first class, whether it's going to a hotel or anything else, and you're staying for an extended period, you take everything out of your pockets and you put it in drawers. And in third class, there was no drawers. Everything was in her coat, and it was a cold night. She put her jacket on when she went out, or her coat, and that's how all the papers came off the ship. That's my theory.
Yeah,
so there was her visa to leave Sweden. There's a doctor's inspection card, which in third class, you had to be free of lice and things like that. They said this little ritual they had to go through, and her baggage claim, and the ticket receipt.
Wow.
So if you had those papers back then, you would have been able to get on board Titanic. It was every piece of document you needed. I don't know, I've just been a part of Hilda's life, so to speak, and trying to put all the pieces together. Because I've been, you know, being the caretaker of these pieces, and I didn't want her name to get lost to history. And this is a way to do it. I mean, a grave site with no headstone, I mean, nobody ever knew who was there, you know, and now she's becoming part of, you know, history again. People can see her, visit her, and talk to her, and her name will continue on.
Yeah.
It won't get lost to history, so to speak. And that's what I'm trying to preserve.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that's what you do with your collection, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, every single piece has a story, and I'm always trying to dig out, you know, the story from every single part of it. And I found a few trails, but they obviously, you know, a lot of them end very quickly. This one's actually gone deeper than most.
See, there is this false myth that we don't have sources on third-class passengers, but as Tony just told us, and all of the evidence and experiences in this episode have shown us, that that's just not true. In a lot of cases, third-class passengers went on to live very rich and nuanced lives, and we have descendants to tell their stories, and we have artifacts, and we have sources. So don't ever let anyone tell you it's not possible. I mean, I'm guilty of it myself. After over two years of this podcast, this is one of the first episodes I've done that's a full episode, full deep dive into the life of a third class passenger. So I want to be doing more of that. So again, thank you to everybody on the day in Skokie for making all of this happen, for bringing all this wonderful information to light. And now I am going to take you to a wonderful call I did with Mia Morgante, who was our eyes and ears on the ground, our Titanic enthusiast there experiencing all of this. You heard her a little bit in the interviews, but I wanted to talk to her. This was a couple of weeks after it happened, and she'd had time to process her experience. We talk about the importance of oral history. We talk about some of the themes that come to light through this whole experience. And so I think this is a perfect order of the day here to bring all of this to you. So thank you, Mia. You did incredible. And this is a really, I think, moving and important conversation we had too. All right. Here you go, guys. Enjoy. All right. Well, I am sitting here with Mia, who was on site for the reveal of the headstones and was so gracious to take pictures. And we'll be featuring that, some of those on Instagram, and the museum will as well. Got some videos, audios. I wish I could have been there, but she was our eyes and ears. And I'm so grateful. So hi, Mia, welcome to the podcast. And thank you for everything. Thank you for, you know, listening to the podcast, for connecting with me, and then also just, you know, doing this huge thing of basically being a reporter for this event and sharing everything with us. So you just kind of introduce yourself to listeners and maybe give us a sense of your personal Titanic story. And then I want to talk about what it was like to cover this event.
Well, thanks for having me. I was so excited, like so starstruck when we started talking. I was like, oh my goodness, this person is in my head all the time. And now I'm talking to her. Absolutely adore the podcast, and it's definitely like reawakened a bit of a Titanic obsession that I've had since I was a kid. For me, it started, I was 10, and I had always like definitely had Titanic on my radar. I was just kind of like a weird history kid. And we went to a Titanic exhibit at like a traveling one at my local museum, and it was similar to kind of how Pigeon Forge and the Branson Titanic exhibits are set up, where you get like a boarding pass for a passenger. And you go through, and we saw exhibits, and they had actors who were explaining like, oh, this is how the toothpaste worked, and this is, you know, this person's things and whatnot. And I was actually a little bit terrified, because at one point I don't know if you want to put this in there. This exhibit you went through, and it was like life on the Titanic, but then you got to a room that was like pitch black and had like star pinpoints in the ceiling, and they had an iceberg in the room. Which was a little bit
more. There used to be an iceberg at Pigeon Forge, and it made national news. It fell summer of 2021. It was like a month after me and my family had been to Pigeon Forge for the first time, and they have not put it up. I don't know the details, and I don't want to speak to, I'm sure it's just worried about liability issues now that that's happened. I don't know for sure, but yeah, Pigeon Forge used to have an actual iceberg in the room right after the bridge. Yeah. So
I think for me, I was a very highly imaginative child. And so that, like, just being there, imagining myself on Titanic, just, it created this obsession. And you know, I loved the movie. I was a bit traumatized by the movie, at first, just the sinking scenes. But yeah, I think I was super drawn to the stories of kids on the Titanic. And I loved that episode that you and Emily did about all the children on the Titanic. Yeah. And so then just being able to come back to it and And this has been, you know, like listening to the podcast, doing this project has been awesome just to delve back into it and all of those things that I loved. But yeah, so I am not a journalist. You are correct. This was super fun though, getting to.
Well, you fooled me. I mean, you would fool anybody because you're, you know, and the way that this episode is edited, some the listeners have already heard some of you, but you really went in surgically and asked some really great questions and follow-up questions. And, you know, with your skill in taking the photos and videos as well, like we have a full sense of what it was like to be there to honor Hilda. So, kind of give us a sense of what it was like on the day, you know, what kind of energy is there in a situation like that, honoring a Titanic victim? I've never been at one of these events, a memorial service for an actual victim. So if you would kind of just give us a sense of what it felt like.
Yeah, so it was a very, like, gray and gloomy day, which felt like it was fitting. And definitely, like, I think we were all kind of, I don't want to say on edge, but just, like, very aware of, like, this is a very sensitive thing. But then there was also, like, this weird juxtaposition of, like, there was construction noise going on next door, like, across the street from the cemetery. And so you just have this weird juxtaposition of, like, this super, like, intense, you know, moment focusing on history and family legacy and how we honor our ancestors. But then also, like, it's still modern day, like it's still 2023, which I think is one of the things that's so cool about looking at history is we see those parallels and we bring, when we bring them into like the lessons that we learn, when we bring them into the context of our actual lives and like life right now, that's really where we get the meat of it, I think. But yeah, it was really interesting. You know, Claire and Anton had never met Hilda, neither of them. So I could tell there was a bit of a, not a disconnect, but they weren't quite sure. You know, they didn't necessarily have a personal connection to her. They had never met her. But then when they did see the headstones, you know, Claire said, oh, like great grandpa looks so much like you. He looks like my dad. And then look at Hilda. She was so young.
And Claire that Claire looks like Hilda, right? Is that sort of,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it was also, I have a family member who is in an unmarked grave as well. She was an infant who died in 1912, I think actually she was like 3 months old. And I didn't even know this until I had done like ancestry research, and my grandfather didn't even know that he had an aunt that had died as an infant. And for me, when I went and visited her grave in Milwaukee, it was kind of a bit of a, like, I don't know, this is, you know, somebody that I never even knew that died, you know, over 100 years ago. And you do still have a sense of like that blood relation of, you know, this person isn't being remembered. Their name isn't in the light. And so then I think getting to see that happen for someone who was so much closer to Claire and Anton, who they did, you know, they do have pictures of, they did hear stories about her, you know, for Anton, that's his grandmother, you know, his mom grew up with her. So I think getting to see that rectified, and also just to reconnect with that part of their history. Anton said he had never actually been to the gravesite in Skokie, which I think is common for a lot of people. I don't think I've ever been to, you know, my great grandparents' graves, you know?
I think and culturally grave visiting seems to be kind of on the decline. I know that's a weird way to say it, but I don't think we go to the memorial sites physically as much as a culture anymore as people used to, just in general.
Yeah, definitely. And so it was really interesting, and it was really great to then after that, you know, I could tell Claire and Anton felt a little, maybe just a little awkward of sort of like, you know, having this moment with someone, you know, they didn't necessarily know. But then when we did get to talk about her, that was really great getting to actually delve into her story and find out what she was like as a person. That was my main goal, was I wanted to find out who was Hilda and who was Hilda after Titanic and before Titanic. One of the things that we talked about that I was really glad that we got to, because Claire said she had never even really thought about it, the fact that Hilda was 21 and left her home and traveled across an ocean which in 1912 was way unusual.
By herself. She was unmarried at the time, and you know, talk about in some of the interview with them. But yeah, it, you know, I, as much as I study passengers on Titanic, obviously constantly, sometimes I miss, it's like forest for the trees, right? Like sometimes I miss the bigger picture that's right in front of my face. And so when you said that, when I heard your interview, I hadn't really thought about it in terms of her either, that this is a woman with a history before Titanic that put her on that ship at that moment and why. And then you can, we could talk forever about deconstructing that part of her life too. And you told me you have a family member that came over at a similar age to the Midwest as well, right? Like a similar story around the same time.
Yeah. So Hilda came over from Europe to the Midwest, and she was 23. My great-great-grandmother came over from Europe to the Midwest, to Milwaukee. She was 21, and she came over in May of 1912, which is just crazy.
Well, think about the what it must have been like to be on a ship in May of 1912. I mean, you might have already booked your passage months ago, and then you're boarding a ship in the wake of the Titanic disaster, and that must have been terrifying.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that aspect. Yeah, they would have known. And like, I don't think them, like, because I did think, I was like, oh, it could have, I mean, realistically, they were coming out of Germany, boarding Titanic, you know, getting passage on Titanic wouldn't have been realistic for them. But still, theoretically, like, that could have been my family, you know, like, that could have been me.
And then would you exist?
And would I even exist?
Mm-hmm. It's wild to think about. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It is just wild. And so, yeah, it was really cool getting to talk to people who have such a close connection and to hear, you know, the ways that it's affected them and also the ways that it, like, frankly, hasn't. Like, Anton, I asked him about it and he was like, yeah, it's just kind of like, it's just kind of a fact. It's like, you know, grandpa was a farmer, grandma was on Titanic, like it wasn't a big deal, which honestly I thought was so cool. Like that it, you know, I think for people like us, obviously we think about Titanic a lot and it has this, it like lives rent free in our brains in this huge, you know, apartment. But for, you know, the families of survivors, obviously it did have probably a huge impact on their family and on the way that that survivor then, you know, interacted just with life. I mean, Anton said, like, she never went home. She was terrified of water after that. But then it also didn't, like, Titanic survivors went on to have normal lives. They went on to have other issues. Like, one of the things that kind of we sort of stumbled upon in the interview that I didn't think of was, you know, we talked about Hilda fishing and having chickens. And Anton said, like, yeah, it wasn't necessarily a hobby. It was just what they had to do to survive during the Depression. I was like, I didn't even think of that. That so many Titanic survivors then went
on to do, well, World War One, a flu pandemic of 1919, Great Depression, and World War II. So, you know, I think about, you know, my husband and I, so we were both born in 84, and, you know, we're sort of, what generation are we? I guess, are we like elder millennials, I guess?
Probably, kind of? Yeah.
Yeah. But we were sort of joking, like, wow, our little generation's really been put through the ringer, you know, like, especially with COVID. And, but then when you hear something like that, I think all generations are, you know, I mean, think about that generation. They were very much put through the ringer. And so, and yeah, arguably worse so. But yeah, I mean, if you were working class and you weren't one of the first class passengers that survived first class, you know, your life went on and maybe you didn't have to, I guess the best way to put it is maybe Titanic played, this is just me kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall, but maybe Titanic played a bigger part in your brain still in the everyday if you didn't have to put so much energy towards sheer survival and existence. It's almost a privilege to be able to dwell on something. And I know that sounds like a very weird thing to say, but for someone like Hilda, fishing, raising chickens, feeding her children, cleaning. I mean, probably like on any given day, the manual labor of working and keeping a home and running a dry cleaning business. She probably didn't have a lot of time to dwell on it. I don't know.
And I think that's super relevant when we think, so like I work in healthcare and in laboratory science. And of course, right now we're getting into all of this about like generational trauma and like the physical ramifications of things being passed on. Like you can see in epigenetics how traumatic events are passed on from generation to generation. And so I think that is another huge privilege thing of, yeah, if you were third class and you didn't get to process it, you didn't get to work through it, you just had to keep going, that gets passed on to your descendants. And I mean, we see that with so many issues. We see that with slavery, with poverty, with, you know, the victims of substance abuse and assault and all of these things, which again, just brings up right up to our day. Like we can directly trace how these events, and, you know, Titanic is kind of, I know you love saying this, like it is such a microcosm of all of these different social issues and historical through lines. And again, that's something that we can trace right up to our day and see how it affects us.
Oh yeah. And I mean, I've talked about it in my own family. I have a half sister who's Jewish. I am not. She is, her dad was Jewish. And so it's that side of the family that, you know, sort of her line there, and we shared a mom. But you know, she talks a lot about, I mean, she's gotten really into it. She would love to talk to you. She's done a lot of research about generational trauma, and she feels like in her family, in terms of the Holocaust, it's definitely there. And she's talked to a lot of her older relatives about their memories of their, you know, mothers and fathers and their experiences. And she, you know, so I see this in my own family that we need to be having these conversations. And, you know, Titanic is just, it never fails to be relevant to, you know, and there are a lot of people who study Titanic that, you know, only study the first class menu, so to speak, and that sort of thing. And they don't want to hear any of this, but I'm here to do this part of the work. And obviously I know you are, you know, very supportive of that, and you want to as well. And the work you've done here helps to fill in the gaps, to fill in those, very important, you know, and not even gaps, but like canyons. I mean, like, yeah. the Titanic has, all of this has only been, I don't know, we've only scratched the surface in the last few years of bringing some of these stories up and talking about them. And so what you did was really important to add to that historiography, and to think that Hilda and her husband have these headstones there now, and people who have studied Titanic can go find her now. It's a very mm-hmm. big deal. So what do you think, you know, having been there physically that day, and I really appreciate your nuanced sense of what everybody sort of felt and what it felt like physically and emotionally to be there, because I think life is so nuanced and complex. And what do you think that a third class survivor like Hilda, what do you think they're, you know, legacy is? I mean, I guess it's such a vague question, but when you left there that day, what were your thoughts about Hilda? That's probably the better way to put it. Like, what was in your head when you left there that day? I'm so curious.
Yeah. So it was definitely a bit of, it was one of those situations where like I walked out of the hotel and I just kind of sat in my car and I like looked at like the bank that was across the street. And it's one of those where you have to like reacclimate to the present. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we talked about, like what is her legacy? How does her family want her to be remembered? And I think for me, what came out of it was just that all of the Titanic survivors and, you know, the ones who didn't survive, you know, before Titanic, they were all people, you know, they all had stories that continued, and Titanic was a pivotal moment in their lives, but it wasn't the only moment. Yeah. So definitely just thinking of her story afterwards and her life afterwards and all of the things that then she had to deal with. And even just thinking, you know, for so much of even when we do talk about Titanic, I feel like a lot of the stories, a lot of the books will stop after the Carpathia or like at the Carpathia. And even just that question of like, what happened after they got to New York? It was like, Hilda probably had a train ticket for Thursday. She didn't have a train ticket. She didn't have any money. She had her wallet on her, which that was a super cool point that Tony, because I asked him, I was like, why is it so rare to have all of these documents? And he was saying that it's probably because in third class, like you didn't have all the drawers to put your stuff in. So you kept
people kept
saying,
People kept their stuff on them. Well, yeah. And when they would, you know, they would go to the dining room in third class, they would often take it with them because a lot of people were sharing rooms with people they didn't know. And, you know, not necessarily that you, I mean, I don't know. I would probably be the same way. If I was in a room with three people I didn't know, I don't know that I would just leave my wallet laying around. Yeah. So if I'm feeling that way in 2023, I imagine they were very much feeling that way in 1912. So yeah, I think it was very common in third class to just kind of have your important documents on your person. Yeah.
But even then, like, she didn't have any money. I think Claire said she got like $25 from the Ladies Aid Society. Yeah. And so she had to make her way to Evanston to where her aunt lived, which already, like, I'm such a child of the 21st century. I can't imagine doing that, like, without Google Maps and without being able to Google, like, where do I buy a train ticket? But just even that trauma of, like, you just had this insane experience and now you are dumped in a country where, I mean, I didn't ask. I don't even know how great her grasp of English was, you know, like,
she possibly not good at all. Many people who boarded Titanic didn't speak, you know, maybe, but a few words of English. Yeah. That would be a good question. I wonder if I can follow up. I don't know if I'll have time for this, but yeah, I mean, that's such a good question is like, do we have the oral history of knowing how much English she spoke when she arrived? Yeah. Like, is that in the family, you know, does the family know that information or is that information maybe even lost to time?
Yeah. But just, yeah, all of that, those things that happened afterwards and those struggles that happened afterwards that of course were colored by Titanic. You know, she never went home. She never went back to Sweden. You know, and that was one thing that I asked the family about is, you know, so many people lost family members during the sinking because they perished in the sinking. Hilda also lost family members in the way that she never went back to Sweden. You know, she communicated probably with her father, you know, what, a letter every couple of months. Like, it's likely she never saw him. You know, her mother had just passed away. Or maybe it was opposite. Maybe it was her mother had just passed away. So already,
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. She's boarding Titanic, carrying just this load of grief, probably trying to just find a new life, find a way out of this. You know, I think sometimes we think about death in the past and we think, oh, well, people died so often. They died so young that it wasn't as impactful, but obviously it was. I mean, the way we feel about death doesn't change over time, you know? So she obviously was already in this really emotionally fragile situation of, you know, her mother just died and she had been her caretaker as she was dying. And then she goes to try and find this new life and this insane thing happens. And she's in this new country where she knows like two people and she just has to build an entire life. And she did. And she was successful. You know, she had children who had grandchildren, who had great grandchildren, you know, now her great granddaughter lives in Colorado. Like, she's half a country away and, you know, she's a successful, you know, professional adult. And that's just, I know that's odds that I've never had to surmount. And I think it would be doing a disservice to survivors if we didn't shine a light on the fact that they did surmount those odds with such a traumatic event having happened so recently.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's a beautiful answer to the question is the legacy of someone like her is obviously multifaceted, but I think you're right. I think a huge part of it is not just survival, but thriving in the face of trauma and the legacy that someone leaves when they just keep moving forward. Because we all know in life, sometimes it's hard to move forward. I mean, there are things that can happen that can stall us out. And that's, I mean, and sometimes that's okay too. You know, like sometimes things are so hard that we do stall, but to keep moving forward like that is very brave. And I think that the story of Titanic, I get in trouble when I say this with some, you know, like, more traditional Titaniacs. I think the story of Titanic is so much less about the ship and more about the people that the story has brought into our lives that we can study. And I think that is her legacy. And I feel very fortunate to put this episode together and get to talk about her. And I'm really grateful that you were willing to jump into this kind of, sure, you know, assignment, yeah, and do this? And does it, you know, as a longtime Titanic person, and I know you said it's kind of recently been revived for you, was it, I mean, I imagine it was kind of a cool experience to get to be involved in this, right?
So cool.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, like, as we were talking earlier, I don't want to make it sound like Hilda's life was all like doom and gloom.
Because it doesn't come off that way at all. No, I mean, no. I sort of have this vision of her now of like being a mom and like fishing, like being a strong, yeah, woman that like woke up every morning to go fishing because that was her culture and that's what, mm-hmm, she knew. And she wanted to keep up traditions from her homeland and probably what her mother had taught her. And no, I actually kind of now have this vision of her as just this bright faced woman that like woke up every morning and was like, all right, let's do this. Oh, you know, I mean, she seems like a pretty modern woman for her time.
And it, yeah, sounds like she was kind of like Anton said, like, it sounds like she was maybe, she definitely had a sense of humor. She was maybe a little snarky.
Sarcastic, snarky. Little, yeah.
Yeah. Which we, I mean, obviously like memory is fallible and oral history is only so reliable, but we do, you know, we have the story about her going up to first class, like maybe charming.
It does match with that personality trait. Yeah. I mean, I know some people some historians have dismissed that story like, oh, that couldn't have happened. But I think it totally could have happened. I mean, there is no way they had top-notch security at every single gate, exactly, or entrance. Or I think it's totally plausible that that could have happened. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, my training is in oral history. So even though I talk so much about how memory is fallible, I just think memories like that are such a beautiful part of the historical, yeah, record. And I don't know, a little part of me wants to believe that's totally true because it's such an amazing, mm-hmm, thing to visualize, you know, like her running up there and sneaking a peek,
yeah,
at this whole other world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it, you know, I think I may even title this episode, you know, out into the light, like this wonderful quote you brought out in the interview, because Hilda is not someone that people who study Titanic focus on very much. She's never gotten her moment in the sun, really. And so this is her moment in the sun for this episode and her headstone and all of the work that Paul and Tony and you and everyone at the museum has done, mm-hmm, to bring this moment together. And so she finally gets her time in the light, and, mm-hmm, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, she was pretty awesome. It sounds like, yeah, very much.
Yeah, I think it's okay to speculate that she was kind of a little bit of a badass, and I love that.
Yep. that's what
I think, like, that's the things we have to, you know, be willing to say as modern, you know, historians and writers and just, mm-hmm, you know, study, like just people who study Titanic. I think we have to start thinking about more modern themes and how we can take, mm-hmm, more modern themes and how we're looking at our own lives, like you said. And that's the point of history. Like, it's not, yeah, facts and figures. It's not just names and dates on a page. It's having these, yeah, conversations and thinking like, wow, if Hilda was here right now, I'd love to like put back a beer with her and, you know, and like go fishing with her, yeah, or whatever. So, well, this has been so lovely to get to, mm-hmm, talk to you to sort of, you know, summarize the whole event and experience, hear from you firsthand. And of course, listeners are hearing your interview, mm-hmm, you know, with the descendants as well. So I just can't thank you enough for doing it. It's just been a great experience to work with you.
Thank you. Like, I mean, your earlier question that I didn't answer, this was so just like a dream come true. Like, ever since.
Oh, you probably didn't answer because I interrupted you. So
no, you're good. Well, I was like, wait, there's something else I wanted to say. Let me say that first. Ever since I was a kid, like, I wanted to be a historian when I was a kid. I wanted to go into archaeology, and then I wanted to be a writer, and none of those things panned out because money and life and all of that. But so getting to be a part of the oral history record of Titanic. And that was something, you know, I told Claire and Anton, was like, this is part of the historical record. Like, this is adding details to something that, I mean, every Titanic book that I've read, I've looked in the index and she is not mentioned,
mm-mm,
you know? And so like, this is adding details. This is adding to the canon of Titanic history that someday maybe it will get written down. Maybe someday, mm-hmm, maybe Gareth Russell will publish another book about third class rather than first class.
God, I wish he's amazing. I would, yeah. Oh my gosh, if he announced that his next project was doing some more Titanic and going into third class, Yeah, his research and work is just impeccable. But yeah, no, I agree. And I think there's going to be a whole nother group of Titanic historians that do something totally different than what's been done for the last 50 years or 70 years. I'm trying to be part of that. You know, I've just started the process of working on my book, which is going to be more of a travelogue and kind of cultural history. Mm-hmm. But now I'm thinking, like, is there a way that, you know, Hilda and this experience is like part of a chapter? Like, it would be amazing to do a chapter on this whole process of how all of these different parts of the Titanic community are working together. And then she is a, you know, is at the center of this event, this, you know, in the grand scheme of life, a small event, but so crucial and important. And maybe if someone opens up the page of a book that they just find at Barnes and Noble, but they say her name and they talk about her. And hopefully there will be many, many books where second class, third class crew will get their time in the light. Yeah.
I do kind of think, and this is like pure speculation, I think that if she knew that we were talking about her this much, she'd be like, that's dumb. You should be doing something useful.
Yeah. She definitely, like, I think she had that like hearty Midwestern sort of like, you know, and I, like, and okay, I would have loved her for it. Yeah. She probably would have been like, what are you doing? What are you doing? But you know, I think like, and so I think we honor her when we, you know, even when we joke and we use the sarcasm, I think it sounds like she would have really appreciated that. Mm-hmm. So I hate it.
Oh, go ahead. That's what I was gonna say. That's how her family remembers her. Like, that's when we were talking, we got comfortable. Like, they were very much, you know, it was a somber occasion, but like, we were laughing through those interviews. Anton was telling stories that he had heard, you know, and that's, if we think of the way that like we talk about our families. You know,
oh, yeah. It's again, multifaceted. Like I hate, you know, whether it's a eulogy or a memorial or just, you know, when a book is sort of memorializing someone, I hate the like standard, you know, stoic, like this person did this and they were a wonderful mother. And then they did this and they were a wonder. And it's so like impersonal and state. It's like, no, I want to know about people's successes and their failures. I want to know when they messed up too. I want to know what they were like when they were just hanging out with their family over dinner. Like, I want to know the nitty gritty of what they actually looked like as a human being. And I think through this project and through the headstones coming to light, she gets that moment. Like, she gets, you know, like we're talking about like the minutia of her life and she deserves that. So, well, wonderful. Well, I'm like, we've got to find another reason to get you on the podcast. So
I'd love to.
We'll have to like find a, maybe if I, find my way up to your neck of the woods for an event, we could do like a collaboration on something, Awesome. And thank you so much again. And I think listeners are going to treasure this episode. So.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having me, letting me do this. It was phenomenal.